From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
When I read the other day that Native Plant Trust, the nonprofit plant conservation organization in New England, had successfully raised the money to complete the endowment fund needed to save its region's most imperiled native plants in a seed bank, it was like a silver lining kind of story. Yes, the plight of natives in the region, like the state of native species in other regions around the country, is dire. Native Plant Trust estimates that a staggering 17% of the region's native plants are on the brink of extinction, with an additional 5% already lost, they say. But efforts like the seed bank offer hope, the silver lining I mentioned, and the seed bank is just one of the organization's seed-focused projects that are our subject today. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
My guest today is Tim Johnson, who in January became Chief Executive Officer at Native Plant Trust, which was founded almost 125 years ago as New England Wildflower Society, the nation's first plant conservation organization and the only one solely focused on New England's natives. Tim has an extensive background in environmental horticulture and biological science, and until recently, he led the Smith College Botanic Garden. Tim, I'm so glad you could join me again, and congratulations on the successful fundraising to endow the seed bank.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's good to be here with you, and we were very fortunate to have so many supporters of this project.
Yes. So is this a big freezer somewhere? What's this? What's a seed bank? What is this seed bank?
That is right. If you were to see it at present, it may not look like a lot. We have a series of freezers, which are held at Garden in the Woods. We also just built a brand new large walk-in freezer, which will be our offsite backup. So when we're talking about seed conservation work, ideally you're storing your material in two different locations
Yes.
in case something bad happens at one of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so just to sort of give people the sort of set the scene, I mentioned in the introduction just briefly the state of native plants. I mean, I remember not long ago speaking to a scientist who's an expert in trilliums, native trilliums. And, you know, most of the trilliums in the world are in the United States, or a lot of them are in this country. And he told me that a third of our native trillium species in the U.S. are threatened with extinction, for example. What's under the most pressure? Like what are some of the critical cases that are in the seed bank or that you're hoping to get in there? I mean, what are some of the species that are targeted that you're, you know, trying most urgently to look after?
So throughout New England, there are 389 species which are considered globally rare, Division I species. These are the rarest plants in the world. And then we can look at Division II as well, which is several hundred more plants in New England. Our seed bank is focused on those Division I species. And then we're starting to step a little bit into Division II. And so a couple of examples, some of the rarest species include Jessup's milkvetch. This is a species we've been working with for a while now, not just on seed banking, but actually then using seeds for reintroduction. And so we've been able to bolster those populations because of the material in the seed bank. And thankfully, through that work, there's actually been three new locations where the plant has been found because of reproduction that's happening, not because of reintroduction. So
Oh.
That's just one example of how we are using the seed bank, not just for storage, but also for reintroduction work.
Right. So there are how many accessions, so to speak? How many species are right now in the bank? I'm sorry.
So there, what I said was that there are 389 globally rare species throughout New England. Right now in our seed bank, we have 2,100 collections. There are actually 476 species. So we have some species beyond the globally rare.
Okay, that's where I didn't understand the numbers. You know, I did. So yes. There are some that aren't on that rarest of the rare list, but that are also important and are in there. I see.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. So we have representatives from over 79 plant families. We added 85 collections and about 600,000 seeds in 2023 alone. And the goal is that we're currently working to have representative samples from around 3,300 known, what we call elemental occurrences. These are basically populations of the 389 globally rare species in New England.
Right. So, you know, seed. So if we sort of backtrack and we think about seed, and so having one seed is not enough. How seed works, and I'm always fascinated by this, you know, the mechanism of seed and how the process of setting seed, multiple seeds, you know, enriches diversity, potential diversity in subsequent generations and so forth. So let's just tell us a little bit about seed. And I mean, it's obvious, but it's also not so obvious why this is the most critical thing, you know, the seed.
Yeah. So I am a seed nerd through and through. My background
is about that. Yeah.
My background is in seed physiology. I really love working with seeds. I kind of think about them as locks that we're trying to pick or unlock. You know, going out and collecting seed is one thing, but then can we figure out what does the seed actually need so that we can store it long term? Some seed can be dried and frozen, some seed can't be. And then we can take a step beyond that, which is this seed, which is in what we call a quiescent state. It's not dead, but it's actually metabolizing. It's waiting for the right conditions. And sometimes those right conditions for germination are really simple. It's just water. That's our tomato seeds. They don't need anything but, you know, temperatures somewhere between 50 and 100 degrees and they need to be wet. They don't even need light to germinate. But other species can be really finicky and can have really complex dormancies. And so just because we have the seed doesn't even mean we can germinate it. So that's another use of our seed bank, is actually using some of the seed to try and figure out how to germinate the seed.
Right.
You had asked about seeds and biodiversity. Seeds are the sexual propagules of plants. So for anyone who's a gardener, who's ever done any sort of division, maybe you're dividing up your salvias or your onions, or you're planting clones of your strawberry cultivars, those plants are all genetically identical to each other. They don't have any diversity between them. Seeds carry their siblings, their brothers and sisters, right? So they share a suite of genes, but they also have their own combinations. And this level of diversity is one of the ways that our ecosystems really resist significant change, and they are able to continue to adapt and evolve as change is happening.
Yeah, I mean, those subtle in one crop of seed from, you know, just one season of seed from these open pollinated, these straight species of plants or a particular plant, there will be subtle differences in the sort of genetics, the traits, I guess, that are in there. And it can prove that some are going to be more adaptable to, because of course they're alive, as you're saying, and even though they're sort of sleeping, they're alive. So they're, you know, the plant, they're adapted to certain conditions, you know, over the generations that that plant's been grown in, and they carry those traits, and it's like you don't know what's going to be needed in the next generation and the one after that and the one after that, and there's variability in the crop, and it's a great thing. That variability is good, right? I mean, they're not all exactly identical.
That's right.
Yeah,
diversity is the thing upon which evolution is acting.
Yes.
Right. A species can't change unless there's a degree of difference within its population to start with, because then as some plants thrive, perhaps because they're more adapted to a drier climate, or maybe they have more resistance to a new disease, they pass those genes on to their offspring. And so that breadth of diversity, it's kind of like an artist working with the full suite of colors versus maybe trying to make a painting with just reds, right? So it's a fuller scope of options. It's where you can't have change happening unless there's a great deal of diversity to start with.
Yeah. It's the secret weapon for survival.
It is the secret weapon, yes.
Yeah, it really is, to not be exactly identical. So the seed bank and Native Plant Trust in general, from its foundation, from its founding, you know, more than a century ago, its regionality is critical. And there are organizations around the country doing other parallel efforts or similar efforts and whatever, and in those areas, specializing in those ecoregions or whatever. And regionality is really important too, because local seed, particularly when we're talking about native plants of an area, that's another genetic thing, right? That's another thing that it's not just any old, I mean, some plants range from the East Coast to the Rockies, you know, in the northern half or two thirds of the country. There are some species that are very widespread in many states, but they're not all exactly the same, as we were just talking about, right? And you might want the local ecotype for best results, you know, so preserving local strains of seed is also important, yes?
Absolutely. One of the examples I think about a lot is redbud, Cercus canadensis. This is a species that's naturally occurring from Florida to Canada. And if we were to look at how these plants at these different locations respond to the changing light, right? The way that our days get shorter and longer over the course of a year, it's not the same between Canada and Florida. Or we think about their ability to survive in the winters. Florida winters are much milder than Canadian winters.
Right.
And if we start to move these plants around, not only will they not probably perform as well. I don't really want nothing against Florida. I just don't want a Florida red bud in my yard in Massachusetts. It's probably not going to make it. It's got thin blood.
Mm-hmm.
But we also, if we were to continually bring plants from different regions into our region, you could end up sort of sending those genetics into your local ecosystems. Now, in a lot of cases, it probably won't matter. You know, we can, there's a concept of genetic swamping. And so this rare individual is likely to have its genes swamped by the locals.
Oh.
But especially when we start to think about restoration scale work, where we might be operating at acres or tens of acres or hundreds of acres, ideally, the plant material that we're using in those efforts is adapted to that ecosystem. They're both going to perform better, and they're going to be better integrated into the wider genetics of the region.
Mm. And so besides the seed bank effort, Native Plant Trust, I think, is also collaborating with other institutions regionally on a project called Northeast Seed Network. And I think it says on the website that's to grow native plants in seed producing gardens to be used in ecological restoration projects and by nurseries to grow plants for sale. So to try to meet the growing demand within this ecoregion for the natives of this region, right? And so this is another project.
This is another project. It's one of the projects I am most excited about. Northeast Seed Network was developed in partnership with EcoHealth Network. There are now several hundred people who are involved in the initiative who all share this goal, which is that not only should we have a sustainable supply of native plant seed, but that we need a network of growers, retailers, and seed brokers who are ensuring that that seed is adapted to the different ecoregions of New England.
Mm-hmm.
Our contribution, Native Plant Trust contribution, is this project we're working on called the Seed Hub. We actually need a better, more descriptive name, but we're starting to pilot the production of seed. And in doing so, figuring out how do we actually clean it? What are our yields going to be per acre? And then the next phase is to start to work with farmers to actually do production and then to bring that seed to the market. One of the things I really love about this work is how connected it is to our local economies. So farmers, especially small farmers, diversified revenue is now the norm rather than the exception. There's a lot of excitement right now around land easements for things like pollinator strips. There's a lot of excitement about what's called agrivoltaic, so combining agricultural techniques with solar energy production. Imagine if those pollinator strips or that agrivoltaic system, that agrivoltaic field, could actually be another cash crop in that it's producing seed that can be cleaned and sold to people who are doing restorations or for the production of nursery plants in the region.
Right.
It's a very noble circle.
Right. Because the demand now you have caught people's attention, organizations like yourselves have caught people's attention with the importance of planting, devoting some of their landscapes to natives and so forth, you know. And the demand, however, has exceeded the supply when it comes to that locally sourced seed. It's you know, we're still often relying on the wonderful and incredible, many of them in the Midwest who have been at it a long time, the sources, you know, who the great nurseries who have been doing this since when you could barely sell the stuff, but they believed in it. You know what I mean? They've been at it a long time, but there's not those nurseries all over the place to get our fill in the blank plant, you know, our Rudbeckia and our whatever, our little blue stem and our this and our that. There's just not, or there hasn't been. So it's very exciting that this, I think, is like Cornell involved in the Northeast Seed Network and other institutions.
There are many institutions. It's growing daily. I can't keep track of all organizations that are involved. But you're right. It's kind of like the dog that caught the car. We've now gotten the word out there. There's so much demand. The other thing I'll note is that at the restoration scale, this shortage of seed has been known for 20 years.
Yes.
Figuring out how do you actually bring this, not only we're not just trying to bring seed to market, we're actually trying to stand up an industry that doesn't exist.
Yes.
And that's a big challenge. It's a wonderful challenge. I'm sure we're going to figure it out. And that, you know, between the various partners in the Northeast Seed Network, we will build this robust network of seed producers and plant producers. But it's a bit of a challenge right now.
Yeah. And then, of course, Native Plant Trust also, like at Nasami Farm, one of your properties, you grow, you propagate plants and you sell plants and you have a consumer-facing nursery operation and other things going on there. So you are, you know, doing this work with native seed on a lot of different levels, yes?
That's absolutely right. I think seed is probably the most recognizable resource that we're working with day in and day out. So whether it's doing specialty collection for state partners and federal partners who are struggling to source material, whether it's seed banking for rare plants, whether it's production that's happening for sales, whether it's production that's happening for reintroductions into wild populations, we spend a lot of time thinking about and talking about seed.
So you said you confessed you're a seed nerd.
Yes.
Does that mean that at this time, like probably some of your staff, because this is a time of year in New England where you are located, that some of the native meadow flowers, for instance, are beginning to set seed and so forth, and harvest times will be coming, along in the next weeks and even months. Are you collecting seed, or are you and your colleagues, are your colleagues out collecting seed? How is that a big part of the sort of fourth quarter of the year activity for some of the staff?
You've nailed it.
I bet you're all running around.
We have a
baggies, little bags.
We have a seed of seed collectors that are working on a couple of projects with the Forest Service. We have harvests coming in from our pilot plot that we have established at Nisami Farm. We have bags of acorns and hickories coming in that are being collected. I will also note collected with permission. We're very, very,
of course,
very, very stringent about written permission for the material that we're collecting. And yeah, I think it's fascinating when I look at this seed, how much of a story it actually tells. It tells us when it's ready to be harvested, because the state that it comes to us in, it gives us clues about how we should be processing it. It might tell us a little bit about how to store it. And then I'm always just can't help, again, because I am a seed geek, I look at them and see them as living things.
You know,
they are effectively babies waiting for the right conditions, waiting for us to unlock them, or waiting to be unlocked by nature. And there's a whole story being told by every one of these seeds.
Are there any, do you have, I mean, I don't know if you, I know that you are less than a year, I think, at this position. So I don't know if you moved or whatever. Do you have a garden that you're making, and are you is seed sowing a big part of the of making that place, or any personal seed stories to share?
I'm always playing with seed. I like figuring out how to germinate it, and I often tease, I really like plants when they're really little. And sometimes I get a little bit bored as they get bigger, but I've got a project right now trying to do some lawn conversion, brought in prairie drop seed, not from seed, but from some plugs, because it's really difficult to germinate. Actually, I'm struggling to grow it from seed. This last year, I put a couple of species of native anemone into my garden that I grew from seed. That I think took me 2 or 3 years to figure out how to get it to grow. I'm always playing with something. Sometimes it makes it into the garden and sometimes it doesn't. I've got you just mentioned little blue stem. I've been growing little blue stem from seed and transplanting it into this lawn conversion that I'm doing. And it's just always a thrill anytime we can figure out how to make something grow.
Yeah, I mean, with the figuring out, like sort of unlocking the secret of each species, what it needs to germinate, I have sometimes looked at there's some reference material on the website of the Wild Seed Project up in Maine, Heather McCargo's project.
And yes.
I don't know if you guys have some of that too, where it sort of categorizes different species by whether it needs cold stratification, or it needs warm, cold, you know, whatever, or it needs to be sown fresh, or it needs to be whatever treatments, pre-treatments, scarification. And I'm always fascinated by that. Who figured all that out? Do you have any references that you use? Do you kind of go to the reference books or something, you know, or just experiment?
There are, well, yeah. So oftentimes going to colleagues and asking what has worked or what has not worked. There are also instances where Native Plant Trust staff have put in the time to figure out how to grow plants. A great example of that is work with Robin's cinquefoil. This was a species that in the 90s was actually on the endangered species list. Native Plant Trust figured out how to store, germinate seed, propagate plants, and then began reintroducing the plants onto Mount Washington. And eventually, the populations grew large enough that the species was delisted. So our staff are doing a lot of that research themselves. Another project that I'm really excited that Native Plant Trust worked on and figured out how to germinate Pennsylvania sedge, Carex
Right,
pennsylvanicum.
right.
I actually learned that Native Plant Trust knew how to do this before I worked at Native Plant Trust because I reached out to the people here and said, "Hey, I'm trying to figure out how to germinate this, and do you have any seed?" And they said, "Not only can we give you seed, but we can tell you how to germinate it." So that research project was quickly wrapped up because Native Plant
Right.
Trust had figured out how to kind of, the species generally has very low germination when it's freshly harvested, around like 3%. And our staff have figured out how to get that up to over 90%. So that means that now when people are growing Carex pennsylvanicum for nursery production, they don't have to do vegetative division. We can actually grow it from seed and again maintain that genetic diversity.
Right. So we just had like a minute left, and I was just curious, anything else you want to tell us about the seed bank project? Like, is there a next step? Is there something now that you've completed the fundraise? Is there a next step that's happening?
There are always next
I
steps.
bet.
So what we're in the short term, the next steps really look like how do we expand our capacity in the seed bank to store not just what are called orthodox seeds. These are seeds that you can dry down, and because you can dry them, you can freeze them.
Right.
There's a whole other group of species which are called recalcitrant. They cannot be dried down, and because you can't get the water out of them, you can't freeze them. And so for recalcitrant species, we need to look at alternative methods of
Wow.
ex situ seed conservation. This might
Wow.
be storage in liquid nitrogen. It might be tissue culture, where we're actually maintaining genetic lines rather than seed. It may be arboretum, for example. We may actually have to grow entire plants or entire trees.
Wow.
So that is something we're starting to explore. Many of our ferns, many of our orchids are difficult to
Right,
store
right, right.
conventionally, and so we need to do some, we need to build some more facilities so that we can actually do that storage as well.
Well, brave new world. Thank you, Tim Johnson. And again, congratulations. Thank you for making time today to talk. I do appreciate it. And I'm so glad to speak to you again. Seed nerd that you
Always a
are.
pleasure. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
And I hope I'll speak to all the rest of you again soon. Don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening and growing from seed meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.